Welcome to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and this is The Off Season, a series of talks I'll be releasing on the road to season 6. This next one is a chat I've been dying to have for years now, and it beautifully exceeded all my expectations. Abeille are two French twin sisters of Cuban descent that are some of the most absurdly talented people we've ever had on this podcast. Since childhood, music has been the dominant fixture of their lives, which makes all the sense in the world when you consider that their father, the late Anja Diaz, taught them so much. Anja was a pioneer of Afro-Cuban jazz and is prolific all throughout the world for his contributions in music with acts like Buena Vista Social Club, Omar Sosa, and even his own solo career. All of this to say that his twin daughters, Lisa and Naomi, had big shoes to fill when they decided to pursue music as a career. Luckily, the only route the sisters knew they could travel was their own, that the best way to honor their father would be to completely strive to do their own thing while also paying respects to their ancestors. And that's exactly what they've done across their three studio albums, with their most recent album, Spell 31, being their most decisive work to date. It's one of those albums you listen to and you could tell that the sisters had a firm understanding of who they were and what they wanted to put out into the world. But was that indeed the case? Well, that's exactly what we explore in today's podcast. Together, we chat about the invisible forces that guides their creativity, allowing attitude to inform your decisions, and the ways they want their listeners to feel golden while experiencing their music. I should also mention that the sisters got very excited during this talk, and a byproduct of that is there are a few instances where they talk over each other. Normally, I edit out instances like that, but for this episode, it just felt very natural to leave some of those in. So yeah, as annoying as it might be at times, I hope you get it. Honestly, what a joy it was to talk to them both. These are two people who live, breathe, and eat their art. And if you're unfamiliar with Abeille, then you're in for a massive treat when you go to listen to their records. Along with being talented recording artists, the sisters are also incredible performers and will be touring the US starting on March 10th at the Regent Theater in Los Angeles. They'll be in New York on March 23rd at Brooklyn Steel, and you better believe that I'll be there shaking my fucking hips with that crowd. Be sure to visit abehimusic.com for tour dates. Also, in case you missed the news, I recently started a radio show called New Exchange Radio. It's an extension of the podcast that features me chatting about songs that I love, playing them live, and featuring a rotating cast of guests that I'm really fucking excited about. You can hear the first two episodes within the New Exchange's podcast feed over on Spotify. Be sure to subscribe on the app you're listening to this on and to also rate and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. Those ratings help us independent creatives in a big way, so if you like what you hear, do let me know about it. Oh, and one more thing before we start. Usually when we have multiple guests, we start with a roll call so you know who's talking. But we forgot to do that here, so to help you out, after you hear my voice in the episode, you then hear Naomi, and the next sister you'll hear after that is Lisa. This is The New Exchange with Abeille. Enjoy. It's kind of crazy because we're still at the start of a new year. Like, how are you guys feeling right now?
Oh, for good.
I feel so relieved that last year is finished. I feel so happy for 2023 and hopeful and grateful. Yeah, I feel like 2022 as a global experience was hard. It was a hard year. Yeah. So I'm really glad. Positive.
That's beautiful to hear. A friend of mine a couple months ago used the word residue to describe it. Like, they described it that, like, 2020 was so, you know, what it was, and even though last year things opened up and we got to live our lives, it was almost like you had the residue of the previous years kind of still on your skin and your clothes and everything.
Yeah, it feels crazy. It feels like the three last years we're still living in that kind of energy and the residue of that energy. That's so true. Yeah. But also, I mean, we need to get our, you know, we need to be patient with ourselves and everything, because what happened is quite wild.
Yeah, no, it's so crazy. Like, I mean, I've been to Europe a handful of times since it's opened up, and I feel the energy is somewhat similar to here in New York, but it's been crazy, just the whiplash of everything going back to normal, but people still kind of trying to figure out how they fit in life, and it's interesting though.
Yeah, and also we all experienced a different type of life, being more at home, having to deal with things we hadn't dealt with for years because, you know, you're in active life. And suddenly when you have to be home and you have to confront those things, they're coming up, right? Yeah. So suddenly we kind of lived differently for so long, saw things we had ignored. And so how do you bring all of that into your new way of dealing with the world? I mean, it's all quite crazy, but it's a, I'm also grateful that we get to continue to live, no? To continue to share with each other, to travel, all of those things that, you know.
Not to sound silly, but like, honestly, this is where I feel a lot of gratitude towards artists like yourselves, because I've been very fortunate a lot for several years now seeing you live. Like, this is our first time chatting, but I've seen you perform on stage a lot. I think the last time I saw you was at Prospect Park, and you know, it's kind of crazy. I remember being in that crowd and thinking to myself of the previous times I've seen you, and kind of thinking to myself like, wow, it really does feel like New York has become a second home to them. Like, the way the city has embraced them, the way they've embraced the city. I wonder if that's something you feel or have felt over the years with coming here.
I mean, we always felt like, you know, the U.S., like, you would understand what we're saying, and what's beautiful is that, you know, we're French Cuban, but when we go to the U.S., it's mostly Americans that comes to see us. So we do feel the connection, and it's funny also how when you play in different, you know, countries, they see you as they want to see you. So for example, when we hear like we're French Cuban, but we feel like when we're in the US, we're more like we're Black, like they do, because the Yoruba part and all that. And I feel like maybe, you know, you all kind of reconnect with your own culture, listening to Yoruba maybe. And it's, you know, a way that is like most closer to most of Black Americans come from. And so it's beautiful because, you know, it's beautiful to share that.
That's very beautifully put. I feel like when I've been at your shows and I've like looked at the audience, I feel like kind of like getting a sense of what the audience is getting from you. I feel like I've seen people really connect to the fact that you allow yourselves to be so free and so full of joy on stage, that there's, I'm sure you've seen it as musicians, especially playing festivals and things like that, that sometimes some artists will be on stage and try to be a little too cool or try to like have a vibe where it's like there's a separation. But I feel like you've always done a really lovely job where it's never felt that way.
And now the live is more powerful because now we have musicians. It's like, it's amazing. It's incredible. Because it's more, yeah, it's powerful. The sound is really strong and it's different. For nearly 10 years, we were only two on stage. So we wanted to do something different. We're kind of like rock stars now on stage.
And also, I think what is amazing about this whole journey is we always said we wanted to be authentic to ourselves. You know, that was always kind of our line, our guideline throughout making records and also throughout performing. And it's difficult to be yourself, because especially in an industry, in the music industry, because when you're yourself, you're uniquely you. There's no like other way to, you know, they can't put you in a box. They can't, like, it's complicated, right? But it also is one of the most rewarding feeling ever when you are embraced for being who you are. You know,
And also I think we changed throughout our lives, and you know, we can be somebody one day and somebody else another day. Yeah. And I think that's what's beautiful, is that if you think that you can be yourself, then you can be all of yourselves.
Mm.
And so you don't have a character that you have to be when you're 18, because we started, we're 18, we're 28 now. So do you imagine doing the same fucking music? Because people are gonna, like, you know, they're gonna go away because they will not understand and shit like that. This happens so much. I'm like, damn, no, I'm not gonna do this.
I love that. I actually,
no, if we wanna be, you know, if we wanna fucking twerk one day, we're gonna twerk. If the next day we wanna do a classical album, we'll do a classical album. If we wanna be all covered up, we're gonna be all covered up. If we wanna have like a panties on stage, then we're gonna put panties on stage. You know, this is the thing that is amazing, is that also telling that is also telling to our crowd and people that listen to us and that have been following us that we're going to change. And that's fine.
Now that's even beautiful. That's the journey of the artist, isn't it? To grow, for the music to grow with you, you know. You don't want to repeat the same thing. You want to discover who you are through making it. And so that's the journey. That's the artist's journey. That's why we are doing what we're doing. That's also the scary thing because no one likes change. No one.
Even us, though.
You know?
Yeah. I'm not in music, but like in real life, I'm like, I hate change. And
you know, yeah.
My loved ones are like, Naomi, I mean, that's life. Yeah. You know, when I have something or when I, you know, I'm sure, you know, it's like being sure, you know? So I hate when I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, because being sure is safety, but we are we are living a life that is nothing but sure. You know, the artist's life is like the most unsure shit you'll ever go through. Like, it's like nothing is promised. You know, it's not a 9-to-5. It's always changing, always transforming. This industry is always morphing into new things. So it's always about adapting, you know, being like the reeds that can fall through the wind, but also keeping your essence, keeping who you are, and keep searching for who you are through all of that, right?
And also some things you can't control, which, you know, I think as an artist, like at least us sometimes, like we really control fake. So it's just growing. We just understood that we can control only what we can control, and then the rest, you know.
Yeah, well, it's what you said there at the end. Well, everything you said, but particularly at the end, really resonated with me. A couple of days ago, I was talking to Kimbra, and she was on the show. Yeah, and she was very much... The talk centered around the fact that one of the weirdest things about being an artist is that you have to grow as an artist alongside all the stuff that's going around in the industry, but concurrently you also have to be a human being and have all the changes of that. And it's a very difficult way to live because you can read all the books and watch all the documentaries, but no one can tell you how to do it, can they?
No one.
And also, like, it's life. And also, like, maybe you can, because let's say you have the recipe. Yeah. If the recipe would exist, we'll always be at the same level.
That's true.
It's also like how people can see themselves through you, how you move, how you talk. It's also about your personality, I think. It's also about what you have to say, the things you want to talk about, the thing also like the world, like how it resonated to what we live in. It's not really
it's not fair.
It's not fair.
Yeah, it's a lot of luck also. It's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of conversation about being ahead of your time. I think that exists to so many. I've seen it so many times. You know, it's a lot also about your album coming out at a moment where the world is listening or ready for it. So our jobs, it's actually kind of have to ignore that. Which is so painful, but having to at one point decide that it doesn't matter. I put out an album that I think is a masterpiece, and it seems like it was the wrong time. It doesn't matter. I keep going. Our job is to keep giving y'all something that means something, something that is from our guts, something that we feel is beautiful, and then keep trying. But the rest is, yeah. The rest is like on other people's hands, on the universe's hands.
The only thing you can control is your image, which is important.
Yeah, that is important. Well, it's interesting to hear you say all that because honestly, and quite serendipitously, I feel like that's what you achieved on this record. Because I think when I reflect on what I got from Spell 31, and this is something I was very keen to talk to you about, is that I feel like many artists arrive at this point where they realize that it makes sense to create things in-house, that they arrive at a point where they feel like they understand themselves always better than anyone. I think about a group that I know personally who I love a lot, Little Dragon. And I remember talking to them years ago about their process, and I remarked to them, like, the thing that marveled me the most about how they work was how they were able to be so succinct. Like, they were able to go, like, we know what a song needs to not be overstuffed, overloaded, and we just know ourselves. And I feel like Spell 31 has that. It feels like a very realized form of what your project is. And I'd love to hear about where your headspace was at when you were making it. Like, do you feel like you guys arrived at a point where you were like, we know who we are in terms of artists, like who you wanted to be as artists?
That is such a good question.
I think we do know who we are, but I think we're always changing. So I think during a process of an album, maybe you know, but then when it's done, I think you don't know anymore.
You've changed already.
Yeah. So and we always want to do different things. So, but definitely when we did this one, we were kind of stressed because it was the third one. Nobody was putting us stressed, to be honest. It was just ourselves, like we wanted, but it was not like a stress that we were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? It was just like, we really wanted to be like beautiful and yeah. But it was really, I mean, we're really happy about this album and we're really happy about the three of them. And for us, it was the most open to the world we ever did. And so that's what we wanted. We wanted to, I mean, when you do this, you just want to have more people and more people listening to your music.
We wanted to invite people in, you mean? We had realized that that was also part of what we wanted to do. But also, funnily enough, through being so stressed, as you say, I think the biggest thing was not stress, it was the doubt. Can we do this? Can we open to the world? Can we do something that is open to the world and at the same time still 100% us, still committed to who we are at the moment, right? Because as Naomi said, and I think it's so beautiful, as soon as you finish the album, you've changed already. It's like crazy. For me, the most important thing about Spell 31 is it felt guided. And I think that's what I look for when I make music, it's just those moments of awe, of like everything falling into peace and you know, that's been given to you, you know, that's not you that found it. That's like literally someone reaching out and whispering the lyrics in your ear. I think that's super important for me. So that feeling guided. And the second thing, and that I have to say is Naomi's work, is putting yourself in danger a bit. It was the third album we were making with the same team. And but now,
I don't think people really like, think we put us in, not that it's a bad thing, but I think they don't really maybe realize that we did it differently, and they maybe think it's like the third of a like
trilogy.
A trilogy, you say trilogy?
Yeah.
Okay. And
explain how we put ourselves in danger on that one.
I mean, we didn't do it the same. Richard Russell and I, we started only together. We did a lot of beats. I think we did more than 30. And so for a week and a half, we're together just having fun and listening to music and you know, creating music. And then when Lisa arrived, without listening to Lisa's songs, because Lisa writes. And when she arrived, then she was a little bit like, what the fuck am I going to do with this? Like, it was so many genres. So many, like, we went everywhere, you know. And so she was like, the fuck you? It's so hard. Like, what am I going to do with this? And we were like, don't stress. We were already, you know, in the mood. So she was just coming. And she was like, well, I feel like you're too cool and too, you know, like, chill. And we're like don't worry. And it was beautiful because the song matched the beats and it was beautiful to see. And also they had to adapt to what we were doing and to what we did. So it was really kind of magical to see how it just all went together.
Yeah, the songs had to gain muscles in order to like fit the energy of the beats. And it's the first time they had to do that. Before they were like divas, you know, everything was put around them perfectly, it fitted the mold. They were just like, woo, great. This time around, they had to be the thing that surrounds the beat. They had to, you know, to adapt. And I think when I arrived, I thought, there's no way they can do this. and Never Underestimate a song. They all did. And I think that was, first of all, that made me feel like, again, that sense of guidance. This is guided, because it's incredible that this piano voice that I did 2 years ago can fit with this, you know, hip hop beat that Naomi just is making without having heard each other, you know, and it just embraces it together. But also it made me feel really hopeful about music and about, you know, doing things differently and trying to, like, yeah, brighten yourself a bit, even though in the moment is not the most, I don't know how to say that, it's not the most, like, cool feeling ever, because you're, like, freaking out on your inside, but then it's the most rewarding.
You know, I want to start asking about songs, but before I do, and thank you for sharing such a thoughtful, candid view of the process, because I feel like what's interesting in that is it really allows you to look at the songs in a very holistic way. But there was something that you said that I found really intriguing. Well, with many things, like, one of the big things was when you brought up that element of doubt and feeling it. When you said that there, I couldn't help but wonder, when you had that in the process of just, like, that as a feeling or a thought, was that something you shared with each other or were able to talk about?
Oh, really? Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And Richard also, we were like, I think it was the first time we were like this, and we were like, Richard, I mean, he was like, we were, you know, sometimes we were saying it to him every day. Sometimes, you know, we wouldn't talk to him about it, but he was always listening to us. And sometimes what is amazing with Richard is that every time he talks, it's like for something. It's like, it's not like, he doesn't talk if there's nothing that's going to come. Like,
he doesn't waste words.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, you're speaking, of course, I'm just going to say for people, you're, of course, speaking of Richard Russell, the XL boss, one of the people responsible for Adele. I mean, incredible human being.
who we produce, we co-produced the 3 albums with him. And so he was listening to us, saying us, I mean, trying to, like, yeah, say, I mean, you got this. I mean, we got this, and we always got it, and it's going to be fine. But yeah, but the thing is, you know, we're twins. So one of the amazing thing with the twins is that even though we might feel the same thing, we don't feel at the same level the same days. So if there's one who is, like, more nervous, then the other one will be less. So there's always a balance in a relationship. You know what I mean?
Kind of like tides in the ocean.
Exactly.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But it was not the whole process, though. I think it was at the beginning. I think it was like, well, we're doing a new thing. We need to, you know. I'm saying we need to, you know. We talk about everything.
Yeah, well, I think what came through in that, like, going back towards what Lisa said about feeling those songs are, like, kind of like coming into your mind and, like, you know, being spoken out of you as though it's not a thought. I think, like, a great example is the opener Sangoma and Creature. Mm-hmm. Like, those, and I feel like it harkens to my favorite thing about what your project has become, where it, like we were talking about, sorry, always feels like you're aiming to be yourselves, which might seem obvious, but I think it shows. No, I don't think it is. Well, I think it shows to me, that shows me how you're able to step away from the push and pull of the music industry. And I feel like, you know, the way the album opens is such a great example. And I wonder, like, what do you think it was that excited you the most about that sonically, like, when you were working on it?
Oh, the voices. The voices for me, the all of the voices just, like, coming like a choir. Just for me, Sangoma was kind of, I wanted Sangoma to be the invitation in. And then the idea would be almost like you're being showered in light and then you're ready. Because you get in, you're showered in light, then there's Oinle, the prayer, right? The healer prayer. And then you're in, made of gold. Then you're in the fight, right? You can do anything. You can get the whole album through you. You're in, you're prepared. And so Sangoma, having all of those voices, having Naomi's drum, all of that was so important. And also, you know, somos milagrosas curándoles el alma. We are made of miracles and we cure their souls. We heal their souls. It meant a lot.
Which I think artists do, even though it's through twerking, they still do.
Yeah.
You know, like when you go see a show, then you don't think about your own problems.
I have to say, you two are some very generous artists. I can't think of many people who make a body of work and they want their listeners to feel like they've stepped through gold. That's very kind of you.
Oh, thank you.
You know what was really beautiful about Sangoma too is it was not a song I wrote for an album.
No.
It was a song I wrote because I did a class called Rhythm, Race and Revolution during lockdown with an incredible woman called Aditi. And it was an online course. And I learned, she describes basically how much music has impacted revolutions. And at the end of the course, everybody had to write something about what they've learned. And it was kind of an offering to the course, right? And we were only women. And it was on Zoom because lockdown had just happened, when it was supposed to be in real. So I decided to write this song because I learned about the Sangomas through the course. And when I learned that, you know, the Sangomas, if they don't follow their path of being healers, they become sick themselves. So a lot of them, they realize they're healers because they are sick, and they go to the healer and they say, I'm sick, what is happening? And the healer says, you haven't accepted your gift. And as soon as they accept their gift, then they can heal others and they heal themselves. And I thought it was so beautiful, this idea of following your destiny. And I thought it was so beautiful that, you know, we were with all of those women talking about this, about the impact of music. And it really linked me back to why I want to make this. I want to make music to heal my soul. That's why I want to make this, you know, to share light and life and death and all of the difficult things, but make it beautiful also to have joy, to dance and all of those things.
It will always be this thing, but I think through us growing up, it might change subject.
Of course.
And ways of doing it. Yeah, but it's always going to be this.
How amazing is it to have the purpose of what you're doing so much at the focal while you're doing it, like so much, like having it be present? That's what I hear when I heard what you said there, Lisa. Like,
but I think is what has to have an artist, because I think otherwise he's lost. Even though the purpose might change, the way you do it might change, even sonically it might change. I think you have to know why you're doing it. Yeah. Otherwise, like, what's the point? It's like, I think in life, you have to know why you're doing things. Even though you lost, you have to try to know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's important.
I'm so sorry. We're all talking over each other. I'm so sorry. It's because we're excited about what everyone's saying.
No, I love it, though.
I was also thinking that part of the thing that is also really funny about knowing why you're doing this is that sometimes, even if you know why you're doing it and you have like that purpose in your mind, you need to also accept when the universe is putting you towards something else. And I think, funnily enough, that's what we learn with song making or with making art. Sometimes we're so sure this is that kind of song. And for hours and hours and days and days and days, you're working on that song and trying to make it work. And at one point you realize, oh my God, it was there all along. It was not at all that kind of joke. It was that kind of song. And it was showing me that all along. I was just, you know, so focused on what I thought was right, on what I thought was good. And to be honest, that is a metaphor for life. I think at the same time, you need to know where you're going. Or have an idea, or have a dream, right? Have a direction, but also kind of allow it. And that's the hardest thing when it comes to life. Allow life to also show you where to go. And if...
Oh, just that you're not ready.
Or if they show you, like, you know...
It sucks.
So bad.
Were you like, "Love, you were such a piece of shit. Why did you do this to us?"
It's like so bad. Yes. Allowing it to stir you, even when you're convinced that this is where you want to go.
I have a hot take, by the way. Actually, I don't think it's that hot. I think you'll agree with me, but I think it's quite beautiful that you've arrived to this point of your career where you have a song that'll most likely be in your set list forever. And I feel like that song is Sister to Sister. Like,
when I thought you were saying River.
Me too.
Well, River's, I mean, it undoubtedly is River for sure, yeah. But I'm thinking in regards to how you could release a body of work and it's like fresh and there's a song in that that exists. Like, every time I listen back to that song, I'm just like, this is gonna become one of their defining songs, I feel like. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It's really nice to do songs that you think, and also the more you do songs the more you create albums, the more you abandon some of the songs that you love, but you can't play for 4 hours, you know, like every night. You need to choose which song are the ones that are going to stay from the albums that were, you know, that were older albums. It's quite interesting to see which ones are the ones the audience claim that they should never leave a set list. And, you know, for example, we sing Away every night, and every night there's people like screaming, like, and it's so funny to me because Away would not have been a song. Like, when I think about all of the songs we make, Away is not the song that comes first into mind, but it's a song that the audience really feels attached to. And I think Sister to Sister is the same. And then for me, they're more like the songs like Deathless and Rise Above. For me, those are the songs I think you always need a moment for the songs in any bass show.
That's very powerfully put. Oh my God. I'm so excited for the show. I'll be at the show in Brooklyn and I can't wait. I have like one more big question for you. But before I get to that, I want to ask, like, you know, it's been 10 years. I don't know if you've, you know, internalized this yet, the two of you, but you're at a point now where there's definitely artists who are doing things who could definitely refer to you as a reason as to why they wanted to be musicians. Like, you're at that point now. So I think I wanted to just give you a second in relation to, it doesn't have to be France, but I think it's interesting in France, like when you're there and have been, do you feel like there's artists you've seen who are younger or maybe even peers that you think the world should know more about, or you feel like, oh, I could see the shared connection, like, in a way?
Well,
like,
to be honest,
not
in the world. I know it's not like we changed the music, I will never say that, but I know people listen to us.
Yeah,
I even with the Yoruba thing.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. And it's amazing. Yeah. And it's amazing. They may not say it, but my ear knows.
Yeah. It's like, I see it like you
say it, to be honest. No, a lot of them say it. Yeah. We received messages from people that are like big that were like, "I love your music. I listen to your music." And it's so funny because then we listen to some stuff and we're like, "Yeah, I can hear that." It's an honor because we have been influenced, Naomi and I have been influenced also by incredible people, you know? That's what music is all about. We influence each other, we share with each other, and I see it as a positive.
Of course.
Well, who's supporting you in France and Europe right now? Are they like artists that you feel pretty good about?
There's a guy called, so in Europe, because we're done with the Europe now, because we finished with the Olympia 3 days ago. But there were a guy called Yellow Stripes, that is really cool. And then in the US, I don't really remember who it is. We need to find out.
There's also when we did the Belgium show, there was a wonderful singer called Astron, and it was her voices are just out of this world. And I know that she's soon releasing stuff, and it's really beautiful. She came to my house to play it, and I loved it.
Oh, that's unbelievable, man. You know, in reference to like that question, by the way, like I know it's definitely a thing where sometimes people try to copy other people, but the way I would kind of frame it is I think when you started releasing music and as your career has progressed, I almost view it like you introduce new colors to people. Like there's new colors for people to paint with.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I think, yeah, that's you know, that's an honor. I also think part of that color was because we did what our dad did. And I want to say that because I think, you know, not many people in the mainstream know our dad, though a lot of musicians do, but our dad was unafraid to mix different types of music, to find who he was through grabbing everything he loved and putting it together. And consciously, that's what we did. Ibe is a mix of cultures, different cultures and different genres of music, and that's why it sounds unique. And so that's all thanks to him.
Well, I'm really happy you brought him up because the last question I had for you was actually about him. And well, first I was going to ask, is it okay if I asked you, if I was to ask you about him? Am I saying right? Anja Diaz. Anga, okay. Well, your father, Anga Diaz, was a member of Buena Vista Social Club, where, I mean, if you have a vinyl collection, you don't have that vinyl. Do you even have a vinyl collection? You probably don't. And he was also a respected artist in his own right and a true legend at expanding the sound of Latin jazz and showing the world what Afro-Cubans could do, quite frankly. And I imagine you knew he was respected as children, but something that I would really love to know is what has it been like for you with getting older, traveling around France, Europe, and just the world, and seeing how that influence has extended beyond Cuba? Because I think what's interesting is that Cuba is very rich in culture. The people are amazing. It's a very unique place, but it's not just a Cuba thing. It's in places that are small that end up influencing outwardly. It does some it is shocking, and I just wonder what it's been like for you to see that.
Well, it's incredible. I remember going to fe we go to festivals and tapes of our dad playing in those festivals years ago, and DVDs and stuff for
Also,
us.
he played with, you know, kind of famous jazz player like Roy, Roy Hargrove, and people like that. So the first, actually, the first tour we did was with him when we were two, and they were touring together, Roy and him, for one of Roy's album. Actually, we are on the sleeve of the album. It's me and my mom, and so yeah, I think it's through musicians and. Yeah, everybody knows, and you know, all the conga players and even like percussionists, they do know my dad because he was, I mean, or dad because he was really one of the best. So they go on YouTube or whatever, and they try to, I mean, to play like him. And he had also his own sound.
You mean playing congas? Yeah, that's and his own technique and ways of doing it. Like, for example, when we listen to an album, we can say, "Oh, that's that," which is so beautiful. But I have to say, it's been life-changing to realize how much he was loved by fellow musicians that we admire. And then you meet them, and they're like, they want to talk about your dad, and it's just like this is the best feeling ever. And I think our mom told us recently that when we were 16, we said to her, we want to play music so that people talk about dad. And any article ever written about us says daughters of Anga Diaz. And so every time people talk about us, they talk about him, and that's the best thing ever.
My God. And
He
like
was the
this is
genius of the family.
literally, well,
He
that's
was.
literally that's happening right now, which is hysterical.
Yeah, I know. He would be really proud. Did you
But
know? Can I
yeah.
say something about him though? And
Please.
that I loved about him. Our dad was incredibly humble. Incredibly humble. And at the same time, knew what he was worth, which I think it's a really rare thing. Often people that knew how good they are, they become assholes. He knew he was one of the best, if it's not the best, playing congas. he knew, but he was nice to everybody. He was a light of a human being. He was not arrogant at all. And I think he wanted to share it. He was a teacher. He wanted to build a school. He did master classes and he wanted people to become better than him. And he kept saying that he was a student too. And he kept learning. And he was a really special human being. And, you know, we hope he's happy with what we're doing. I think he is.
I'm more than sure that he is. And thank you for sharing that. And I would just like to add, I know at the top of that, it was kind of like, you know, talking about the, like, because he's such a well-respected musician. It's in the context of, people would say, like, a musician's musician, like, that term, mm-hmm. in terms of, like, how he's known. But can I say, like, I think it's worth noting so people know, he's one of those people that, like, people know him if they don't even know his name. And I think what's very significant for you, having grown up in France and, like, still going there and being there from time to time and having it be a partial home, is that, you know, it has to be while being on, like, the metro or just, like, on a cafe or something, and knowing that someone has a like, if it's not them, their parents have a record that your dad was.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a wild thing, and also that they saw him, because many people that come to our show said, "I saw your dad at the Buena Vista Social Club concert back in the day. You were not even born." So that is also crazy that people went to see him live, and then now are seeing us live.
It's quite. It's a beautiful story, and the story is continuing. Thank you so much for today. I'm really looking forward to seeing you. And when is it? Sometime in April, is it?
The show? No, it's in March.
Oh, March or April, because we finish in April. So maybe it's at the end. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I know, but yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be beautiful. And
I'm so excited to come back on tour for another time for this album. Come back to the US. It's like,
I mean, I know I said what I did about French audiences, like, being uptight sometimes, but trust me, the way New York's been going, people are definitely going to, people need your show. Your show's coming at a very opportune time. People are pretty uptight here right now, so it's a good time to go.
No, we're all going to celebrate together, and that's what life is about.
It truly is. Well, I'll let you run. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for checking this out. Be sure to subscribe to The New Exchange via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you stream podcasts. Until next time, thank you for listening.